From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello and welcome to the weekly podcast from the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm Tim Lightfoot, your host, and every week we bring you interesting people from the world of sports medicine and human performance and let them tell you their stories about why they're doing what they're doing and what they're doing, and without fail, they're always passionate stories and folks that are very interesting to talk to, and this week is no exception. We have Roberta Anding with us. Roberta got her master's degree from Louisiana State University in nutrition. She has many, many titles. I could go on and on with an introduction. In particular, she's the director of sports nutrition at Texas Children's Hospital, and she is a sports dietitian for the Houston Texans NFL franchise. Also works with the Astros and the Major League Baseball world, and interestingly enough, is also the sports dietitian for the Houston Ballet. Welcome to the podcast, Roberta.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. Also, Roberta has an extensive radio background, so she's going to sound really good today.
Oh, no, that's setting me up for failure right there, Tim. We're jumping out of the gate strong.
Okay. You know, we noticed that as we were preparing the background material for this podcast that you've done a lecture series called Nutrition Made Clear. And so often, nutrition is not very clear nowadays, and one of the things you talk about in that series is that you want to replace nutritional misconceptions with hard science that people can understand, which is a great idea. So let's start off with, what are common misperceptions that people have that cause detrimental nutritional mistakes?
Well, I think if we're talking about the world of athletics and sports medicine, if I could wave a magic wand and make this myth go away, it would be more protein equals more muscle. Mm-hmm. And certainly working in a team environment with athletic trainers and strength coaches and exercise physiologists, it really requires more than just that to get somebody bigger, stronger, faster. So the protein shakes, eating raw egg white a la Rocky, those are the kinds of things that, you know, those myths just don't go away.
Right. And those raw egg whites don't taste good either.
I don't know. I'm guessing that they wouldn't. A little slimy for me. I'm guessing that they wouldn't. But, every day I'm asked, you know, where's a good protein source? And I think when we look at some of the great work coming from John Ivey's lab at UT, looking at protein timing, nutrient timing, that's oftentimes the hook where I say, you don't need more protein, but we need to move that protein to make it a little bit more efficient for you rather than just adding more.
Yeah. What do you tell people to keep them from falling into these kinds of nutritional mistakes? Do you help them get educated, point them at websites, or what, in your experience, has been the best way to deal with these athletes to help clarify some of these misconceptions?
Oh, I think that's a great question. And we all know that when you perform better or feel better, that's the best testimonial. Mm-hmm. So when you make these shifts and someone says, you know, I made it through my workout this morning and I feel better, or, you know, I was able to get one more rep in the weight room because I wasn't so gassed, then it becomes, what else do you got?
Right.
So I usually try and hook people in with something that's evidence-based, science-based, that I know is going to work, and that sets the stage for, I guess she knows a little bit more than the stereotype of a dietitian, you know, the green Jell-O hairnet kind of person. Maybe this is someone that I can actually go to for evidence-based information. As for websites, I have to tell you, some of them are really awesome and some can really be problematic.
Yeah.
I think Gatorade has actually now, with the addition of Asker Jupendrup as their medical director, or their scientific director, Gatorade Sports Science Institute will now be a place where people can go get evidence-based information. And then certainly my professional organization, which is called SCAN, stands for Sports, Cardiovascular, and Wellness Nutrition, and that's SCAN DPG for Dietetic Practice Group, scandpg.org is another place to go and get really great evidence-based information.
Super. And if the listeners didn't catch that, we'll make sure we put that in the show notes on the website.
Terrific.
Yeah, so people can get to that. Do you find people, in general, willing to listen? Are people confused about nutrition? I mean, that's the one thing I hear is, for example, eggs. You know, they weren't good for us, now they're good for us.
And yeah, and certainly you know as a scientist that when the science moves on, the recommendations change. Mm. And eggs are, you know, a really great example. We used to think you don't eat eggs because of the cholesterol. Well, now we know eggs are probably one of the best sources of choline out there.
Mm-hmm.
And choline is essential for a neurotransmitter, cell membranes. So we know that it's essential, and it's a great source. Certainly, it's relatively cheap for college or high school athletes to have, and the science has evolved to say, you know, maybe they're not as bad as we thought. So I think that contributes to confusion, but I think all science has the potential to contribute to confusion because our goal is to discover, to research, and to find out new state-of-the-art information. And often the consumer is getting their nutrition in sound bites.
Right.
Don't eat this, eat that.
Right.
This is going to kill you, this isn't.
Right.
So I think it again, the media oftentimes contributes to that confusion. And therein lies, I'm going to say, my job security.
Sure. Which is always good to have.
Yeah,
days,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, people forget that science does change, and all these guidelines, whether they be nutritional or not, are all based on science, and so sometimes those change as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's why, again, for doing what I do for a living, are people willing to listen? Absolutely. And I would say that, you know, the stereotype, and it really is a stereotype, of a professional athlete, you know, having ingrained behaviors, not willing to change, arrogant, is just that. I would have to say in my 10 years at the Texans, I've had some of the most fabulous men to work with that even though they may not be a Texan anymore, I still keep in contact with them, still hear from them. They still help me, let me help their families with nutrition or their post-career nutrition. And so it really is that stereotype. You know, for most athletes, their body is their job. Their body is their paycheck.
Right.
And so whatever is going to help them, and clearly in a world of contaminated supplements, the more I can
right.
steer people into clean nutrition and away from products that are going to ruin their careers, then I think it sells itself.
Yeah. I mean, that's a topic that has come up in several of our podcasts, is that is a huge difference with elite athletes, especially with nutrition versus common folks, is that they are responsible for everything they put in their body. And if they put something in that's contaminated, there are severe consequences.
Oh, you know, in the NFL, you lose 25% of your salary. And for most of these men, you know, we have this illusion that everybody makes $150 million, and that's really not the case. And for a lot of men that are making league minimum, 25% when you're counting on that income is a lot.
Right.
And, you know, I always say, if you're going to cheat and put a needle in your behind, I hope you get caught.
Mm-hmm.
But I also would say that supplement companies lie. And I would say, quote me on that.
Okay.
They lie. And when an athlete is lied to and follows best advice from maybe their someone who's well-meaning, a family member, you know, an old college buddy, a parent, and certainly at Texas Children's, I have parents who have given out unbelievably bad advice, not because they're intending to do that, but they heard it from somebody who heard it from the clerk at the supplement store. And I think you're getting your nutrition advice from an 18-year-old kid. It's like going to a car mechanic and say, I'm having a little bit of chest pain here, and can you help me out?
Yeah.
So I think in the world of dietary supplements, I think, my opinion, in 2012, it's worse than it's ever been.
Mm.
And unfortunately, college and professional athletes are left holding the bag, and the perception is if an athlete tests positive, they're cheating or they're doping.
Right.
My first response when I hear that is I wonder what he took.
Right, right. That he didn't know, that he didn't know what was
nope.
in there.
Nope, yeah. Nope. And that to me is the tragedy. And, you know, again, if you're attempting to cheat, I hope you get caught because it dirties the sport.
Right.
But if you're really, and who doesn't want an edge?
Right, exactly.
If you're really just trying to get an edge and do something that, you know, may keep you in the league another year or two, no different than us at our jobs. You know, you want an edge that you can get that promotion or whatever it is.
Sure.
Sure. Players are no different, and they know they're on the clock. Football careers aren't long, and the goal is, can I get my money and retire in one piece and move on to the next phase of my life? No one ever says, gee, I really hope I get caught and lose my job and lose my salary.
Right. Now, do you find most of these athletes, whether we're talking about baseball or ballet or football, do they come in to this level of performance with much nutrition knowledge, or do you have to start from ground zero with them when they come in? Or?
Great question. A lot of it from, an athlete, let's use baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of baseball players don't go to college. They come directly out of high school, and really they don't have much information.
Right.
But
right.
in my experience, oftentimes really willing to learn because they know they missed something. On the other hand, you could have a baseball player who went to an Ivy League school, and I'll have a level of nutrition dialogue with them that's better than what I have with my graduate students because they've read, they maybe took a course, maybe they were an exercise science or kines major in college and they took some nutrition, and now the dialogue, in 30 seconds I can figure out this guy really knows what he's talking about, and it's easy to take them to the next level. Ballerinas, I will always say, ballerinas know a ton about nutrition.
Do they really?
Oh, absolutely. Very, very sophisticated questions. Very motivated, very, just absolutely delightful. I just love my affiliation with the Houston Ballet. They're just such a great group of athletes to work with. And again, they're really looking at, you know, this is as a performing art, and there are body weight requirements, and no different than in a lot of sports, or body type requirements. And they work really hard to try and keep themselves healthy and well. So a lot of it just depends on where that athlete went to school. The challenge we have in collegiate sports, and this is truly a challenge, is that oftentimes the nutrition information is handed out by the strength coach or the athletic trainer, and maybe they know a lot or maybe they don't know anything. And the trend is hopefully that all Division I colleges will hire a full-time sports dietitian, but that's not common practice. And again, because nutrition, everybody eats, everybody's an expert. And so nutrition has been subsumed into other disciplines, and on some level, it's like any other level of sophistication. You get what you pay for.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So sometimes I have to undo what was taught because it's just factually wrong.
Right.
And I never would ever anticipate that anybody would intentionally give out bad information, but I know, for example, how hard the ATCs that I work with work, and I mean it. I think they're unsung heroes in sports medicine are the certified athletic trainers. I can't imagine them taking on one more role and being able to do it well.
Right.
So I think, again, the long-standing history with this is everybody eats, everybody's an expert, and if you come across with a strong opinion, somehow people believe you.
Right.
And
right.
I always say, you know, follow the science.
Right.
And if you can't back it up with a current research article, and even in my Rice class, I'll say, if you prove me wrong, I'll give you an A. You're done for the semester because you worked really hard digging up the literature to prove me wrong.
Right.
And if you're that level of a scientist, you've earned an A.
Right. So let's move a little bit away from the athletes. We may come back to them a little bit later. Let's take this out to the general population. You know, you talk to folks, and so often they go, you know, my diet is terrible. They know their diet is terrible, and they're always looking for, you know, the quick fix, as you say. What would you say is the first step in helping someone slowly get their diet pointed towards a healthy one?
Well, and you just said a really, really key point that is unbelievably true. People know that their diet isn't great. And I, you know, if you asked a five-year-old what's better for you, an apple or French fries, chances are that they could answer that. So the challenge always is it's not always a knowledge deficit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being able to move around the barriers. You know, it's not being able to problem solve around the barriers. So oftentimes that the first step is not really educating somebody about nutrition because they know something.
Right.
It's where are your barriers and can we get you to move and think about those barriers in a different way? Or if your barrier is time, is there a way that I can help you to put something together that's time effective? Or if you don't cook, can I teach you how to do just a few things with a slow cooker where you can do that? And unfortunately, and I'll admit I was one of those folks, I came out of graduate school and I really wanted to teach people everything I knew.
Right.
And then I really thought I was doing a good job. Now I let my client or my patient or my athlete tell me what they can't do and let me help them walk around those barriers or have a different way of looking at it. And honestly, I think that's where real behavioral change can take place.
Yeah.
It's not that they don't know that, you know, eating whole wheat bread is better than eating cookies.
Mm-hmm.
But the cookies are there, they're starved, they didn't plan well, and, you know, I'll start tomorrow, the old I'll start tomorrow adage.
Yeah.
So that's what makes my job just so fun, because no one is the same.
Right.
No one's the same, and none of their barriers are identical.
Right.
So, again, I think that's always the first step for all of us, is to say, I know I should do this, but why can't I? And what are my solutions around that problem?
Right. One of our previous podcasts, we talked to my wife, who has worked with women who have overweight or weight issues for
mm-hmm.
many, many years. And one of the barriers that she continues to run into is that people don't seem to know how to cook any longer.
Correct. Oh, I think that's huge. And, you know, if you come from a microwave society, I think, you know, we're seeing, you know, extremes. We've got the foodies who can cook and they're watching all the television shows, and then we've got people who said, no, I can't even boil water.
Right.
So I think for those folks, they're almost reliant on packaged foods or convenience foods, which may be calorie controlled,
right,
but they're not quality controlled.
Right.
And so the challenge is, you could keep the calories low, but I'm pretty fond of saying 100 calories of awful food still is an awful food. And just because the calories are low doesn't mean it's physically satisfying. It doesn't mean that it's going to stay with you very long. It just means the company's done a really good job of letting you know how many calories. Not a bad thing.
Right.
But for those folks, just like your wife describes, that can't cook,
right,
I think that's another really untapped area, is partnering registered dietitians with chefs
mm-hmm.
and giving the best of both worlds, quick and easy cooking techniques. And I have dietitian colleagues who can't cook.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, they're younger than me, but I grew up cooking.
Right.
And so modifying recipes are easy for me, and teaching people, you know, time sensitive, just like I'm sure your wife does.
Yeah.
How do I put together a healthy meal in less than 20 minutes?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think for those folks, it's a challenge.
Well, I know one of the things Faith and I have talked about, when we've talked about why cooking has decreased, is one of the things that she, the comments that she made, is that they don't teach home ec in school
yep.
any longer.
You know, they certainly don't. And again, I went to LSU, Deep South school, mm-hmm. and not only, I mean, I really had a course in how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'm wasting college tuition on this, but I have to tell you, every single day, I can come up with something I learned in my food science course, or even in, if you want to call it home ec.
Yeah.
I learned how to cook, and I learned how to substitute and make something taste good. And my husband will say, is this good for me, or does it taste good? And I said, if you can't tell the difference, I've done my job. And so I think, again, for your wife working with that population, I'm sure that's a huge barrier.
Yeah.
Huge barrier.
And that's such a basic life skill. You know, we tend to think that we're only going to teach things in school that we can test at the end of the year, but it's, you know, we also forget that school is about gaining life skills that make us better people, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah. And you know, I think one of the fun things is at Rice, we talk about the education inside and outside the hedges, because Rice is surrounded by this beautiful walking trail.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff inside the hedges is the chemistry and the physiology and all those other wonderful things. Outside the hedges is, you know, you might want to go to one of the local elite grocery stores and take a cooking class this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll tell football players that, you know, this would be a really good life skill for you to have. And I know that when sports nutrition was gaining popularity at Texas A&M, Amy Bragg, when they were putting money in, and she was the first sports dietitian for Texas A&M, built a demonstration kitchen,
mm-hmm.
which was just a really smart idea to teach athletes basic cooking skills,
right,
so they're not going through drive-through windows at 11 o'clock at night. They can go home and whip something up that's better for them than something that they could get out.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with guys cooking, is there?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, most of my football players can grill, and then they rely on somebody else to put in the sides.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if you can grill, if you can manage that, because I think that's a little challenging, you can manage that and do a great job, the rest of the stuff, the sides, are actually the easier thing to put together.
Yeah. And you've talked about barriers, and we've talked a little bit about learning how to cook. You know, there's so many components to nutrition, and people get, I think, confused by some of the terms. What would you say is the top component that if someone thinking about changing their diet, they need to focus on things like, do they need to focus on calories or fat content or antioxidant levels or sodium levels? We hear all these things out there.
Another great question, and I have to say, thanks to some of my great graduate students here at Texas Children's, we were using the plate method probably 7 or 8 years before the government adapted it and started to have MyPlate and all the other things that come along with MyPlate.
Briefly tell us what that is.
Yeah, MyPlate is a public health initiative to teach people how to organize food on their plate. And from a simplistic standpoint, 50% of your plate should be fruits and vegetables, and the other 50% divided between a starch like potatoes, rice, breads, and a protein, whether it's beans, tofu, chicken, fish. So a quarter of protein, quarter of starch, and 50% of your plate fruits and vegetables. I have to tell you, although it's so simple, so simple, it is powerful enough that when I was hired by the Texans in 2002, my fabulous owner, Mr. McNair, who's a wellness aficionado, said, how can we make this simple for football players because they've got lots of other things to do, and we buy segmented plates. We've been doing that since 2002, and players know that their first plate of food, because it's probably not enough for them, in fact it isn't, first plate of food, 50% of that first plate belongs to me. 50% of their plate should be fruits and vegetables. With the message is, you know, football players, average life expectancy of an NFL lineman is 57, and they don't die of their orthopedic injuries. They die of hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and complications of diabetes. So my goal has always been, I don't control the wins and losses. Talent wins games, and players win games. I can control their performance in terms of how well they're able to hold up during the season, but more important to me is if I can prevent anybody who's ever played at the Houston Texans from not being a statistic, I've done my job. And so from a, whether you're an athlete or a consumer, this public health tool is unbelievably powerful because then all the things that we think about, plant-based diets, American Cancer Society recommendations, American Heart, are all translated in how you organize your food on your plate. So if you do this and you cook with not a lot of grease and you're not frying foods, it by default becomes a moderate calorie meal because again, unless you're getting a massive plate.
Right.
If you're eating off a platter, well, then that doesn't work.
or a tray.
Yeah. If you're eating off a tray, that's probably not going to work either. But if you look at that as an, a starting point for the average person, it covers everybody. It covers children to adults, 50% of that plate. Find a fruit or a vegetable. And, you know, for a lot of my families, they're below the federal poverty line. And so they'll say, well, you know, I shouldn't get canned because canned is awful. And clearly, you know, it'd be better if you could afford fresh, but that's not practical for a lot of folks, working, single working mothers, things such as that. So the reality is if it's frozen, great. If it's canned, all right, it's canned, but at least 50% of your plate is fruits and vegetables. And, again, sometimes we want to make nutrition recommendations so complicated where – the science supports the simplicity of the way you organize your plate.
And that's an important message.
No, I think it's a huge message.
One of the things we like to do on the podcast is help people understand where they can get help if they need it. And we also are have been very outspoken in that if you want to get help from somebody, get help from somebody that's educated in the correct area. And when we've talked about nutrition in the past, we've always talked about a registered and licensed dietitian.
Yep.
How would somebody find someone that was able to help them, maybe somebody that's not just a hospital nutritionist but actually can help them with their lifestyle issues as well as their dietary issues?
Yeah, great question. I think a lot of it depends on who you're looking for. So, for example, I'm going to say I'm competent in my practice area, but I would not be competent if you put me in a neonatal intensive care unit. I'd be dangerous. So just like physicians specialize, OB-GYNs, pediatricians, so do dietitians. And so a good place to start is my national organization, now called the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
Okay.
And the website is Eat Right, pretty simple, eatright.org, and there's a Find a Dietitian feature, okay, which, you know, again, you can say, I'm looking for a dietitian wherever you live, and then you can narrow it down. And honestly, you call the person and say, I'm looking for a specialist in this area. Let's say you have Crohn's disease or something, diabetes, and you're looking for a specialist. If somebody calls me and I'm not the right person, I'm going to find them the right person. Mm-hmm. So okay, that would be one start. If you're looking for sports dietitians, my opinion, there's only one place to look, and that is my practice group, again, called SCAN, okay, scandpg.org. There's a Find a Dietitian feature, and if you're an athlete trying to improve your performance, if you're trying to prevent chronic illness, that is what SCAN is all about. Okay. So, again, from my point of view, sports dietetics is so subspecialized that you really want to look for someone, a SCAN dietitian. And then there's also, the alphabet soup that we all have after our names. There's a certification that is abbreviated CSSD,
okay,
which stands for Certified Specialist in Sports Dietetics, meaning that you got the book smarts, but you've also had hands-on experience working with really physically active people.
Right.
So
they certainly have different nutritional requirements.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I've seen people go to a weight loss center that have been elite athletes, and unfortunately, I've seen their careers almost ruined because their calorie level was too low. And my experience with athletes, they tend to be "tell me what to do and I'll do it" kind of folks.
Right.
And they would follow it, losing tons of lean mass, not doing well at all. But they were following a program from a person that thought that they knew what they were doing. So I think specialty of care is a real key buzzword, and knowing what your personal goals are. Maybe you want, you know, something for your children. Well, then you want to find a pediatric dietitian.
Right.
So, you know, again, we specialize, and you want that specialty care because that's going to get you, I guess, maybe a little bit closer to your goals.
Right. Now, I ask you one more question on this, and we'll move off of it, because so many people hear the term nutritionist as someone that can provide dietary help.
And yep.
That help, I guess, educate us as to what the difference between an RD and a nutritionist.
Wow. Well, I'm not a very politically correct person, so I'm just going to give you my thoughts on that.
Okay.
It took me a long time, 4 years of undergraduate school, 2 years of graduate school, to get that RD credential behind my name, which means something.
Right.
There is less control of the term nutritionist and more variability. So there are programs that you can go to on the weekend. There are 10-month programs from what they call the largest nutrition school in the world that somehow is going to replace the physiology, the biochemistry, the coursework that I had to do, that you're going to condense it down into 10 months.
Right.
And
right.
Unfortunately, even some of the fitness credentials are going for weekend certifications in nutrition or weekend certifications in weight management because it's a way of enhancing skills. And unfortunately, I think for a lot of folks, it really dilutes the quality of care. And again, I work with some fabulous athletic trainers, fabulous strength coaches, that may have, you know, a graduate course in nutrition. I think working together seamlessly as a team means that they may give up some of what they know to capitalize on what they do best. And unfortunately, because there's a lot of myth in nutrition, that the more outrageous some of the claims are, that, you know, I can do X, Y, and Z and give you a supplementation program that, oh, by the way, is only going to cost you a couple $1,000 a month, oftentimes is so enticing to the average consumer. They'll say, well, you know, a dietitian, she's just going to talk about the four food groups, and my nutritionist was doing all this stuff. Well, the problem is, if it isn't evidence-based, then it's my opinion, it shouldn't be done.
Right.
Because legitimately, you're taking somebody to the fringe, and, you know, I just always ask, did you ever think that maybe they could hurt you? You know, maybe they could give you bad advice. I had one nutritionist tell a patient of mine who had diabetes that inulin, which is a fiber, was the same thing as insulin.
Ooh.
And I go, they did what?
Yeah.
And so when I hear from clients, or, you know, my my nutritionist told me I had a zinc toxicity because my hair had so much zinc. And I said, well, what kind of shampoo did you use? Well, you know, an anti-dandruff. Well, I said, do you know anti-dandruff shampoos have a zinc compound in them? So you don't have a dietary zinc toxicity. You wash your hair with this kind of shampoo. Mm. So I think, unfortunately, and again, there are some great nutritionists out there, but I think when you have so much variability in that term, it really is one of those things that you got to look at it and say, buyer beware.
Right.
Ask questions. Interview people. And again, there are times that people will call me and I say, you know what? It's not that I wouldn't want to see you, but I'm not the right person. Let me get you plugged in to the right person, a colleague of mine, or let me find you somebody in your state that can give you really good information. And again, sometimes I'm not the right person, depending on what they're looking for. But depending on where that person got their nutrition education, they could be terrific as a nutritionist, or they could be dangerous as all get out.
Yeah.
RDs, standardized education, you know at least you've got some basics. You find the specialty person, and voila, you got a much better solution.
People would never go to a non-credentialed physician, medical doctor for health advice. And so
you hope not.
Why they go to people that don't have education in exercise or nutrition, and for those types of that advice, just it blows my mind sometimes.
It does. And again, you know, I look at it, I'm going to say in a very positive way, is that they're going because they want to make an impact in their health.
Right.
They just maybe went to the wrong place. So I don't know that it's, I'm going to say it's irresponsible on the client or patient or athlete's part, is that they're really seeking ways to improve their health. And I always think of that as a positive. The question is getting them with the right person, you know, getting them with an ACSM certified exercise physiologist. You know, not a personal trainer. If you've got cardiovascular disease, I got to tell you, you probably shouldn't be going to your personal trainer. You need to go up a few notches on the ACSM chain to get the right competent person. So the goal, and I think that happens in all disciplines, is are you getting the right person, the right level of credential to make sure that your personal needs are taken care of?
Right, absolutely. So unfortunately, we could talk all day about this stuff. Unfortunately, we're running short on time. Roberta, do you have a take-home message for our audience today?
Yeah, I think, you know, being relatively chatty, I'll condense it for you.
No.
I think everybody has the power to improve their nutrition by thinking of that plate method. 50% of every time you sit down at the table, it should be fruits or vegetables. I think also because this is a sports performance institute and sports medicine institute, athletes need specialized care. They need to get it from the right person. Again, the right group of professionals, not just one, the right group of professionals. And then the third summary statement would be, if you're going to take a supplement, make sure that you're getting something that's clean, safe, and legal, and go visit a sports RD to look at, is there a way to do this with food first, and then supplement to supplement an already awesome diet.
Great take-home message, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me, and I look forward to working with you all in the future.
Yeah, absolutely, and I want to thank all of you for downloading us and taking the time to listen. We certainly enjoy bringing these to you every week, and we hope that you join us next week for another leader in the field of sports medicine and exercise science. Our T-shirt question for the week is, be the first one to send us an email with the answer to the question of your plate, 50% of it should belong to what food group? Send us the answer to that question. Be the first one to do that, and you'll win our nifty free podcast T-shirt that we have, and they look great. And so we look forward to hearing from you on that. In the meantime, again, please join us next week, and we hope that you stay active and healthy.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Cheryl Marek and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.